Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get started with our review of last night's Monday Night Raw, a couple of articles of news to take care of. One of the first ones is there's been this social media sort of rumor mill running saying that Cody Rhodes is working without a contract in AEW and that he could be the mystery entrant into the Royal Rumble and perhaps he's abandoning AEW for WWE. Now, I don't know about mystery entrant into a Royal Rumble. What I do know is this. Cody Rhodes is not abandoning AEW. Cody Rhodes has vested interest in the business. And he's certainly not leaving it. With a contract, without a contract, does not matter. Cody Rhodes is going exactly nowhere. And if he did, if Cody Rhodes literally made the jump to WWE, it would be probably the most shocking piece of news out of the wrestling world in 10 years. But I would say it absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is not happening. Cody Rhodes really doesn't need a contract. When you're literally the top guy in the business, I mean, you're not the owner. Tony Khan is the owner. But when you're literally the top guy, and you're literally the guy who's pulling all the strings backstage, you are, for better lack of a better word, the CEO of the company. You're the guy really running things backstage. You don't need a contract. You're not going anywhere. And I'm not even so sure the contract expired. Maybe the contract expired as a in-ring performer. But what about all of his other duties? So before everybody goes nutso on that, I don't think Cody Rhodes is going anywhere, and I don't think he's a mystery entrant into the Royal Rumble. It's nice that they have these rumor mills floating around, but, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath. Secondly, we have to talk a little bit about Britt Baker because she seems to have somewhat hedged her bet. At one stage, it was reported she said, "Who in the world would ever work for the WWE? You can't trust the company." Now it's being reported, well, that's not exactly what she said. She said the WWE made her an offer, but it would be highly unlikely because it would be hard to trust the company. That's two different statements. Two very different statements. So those are the two news items we wanted to work on for you. Cody Rhodes isn't going to WWE. WWE, would extend a hand to AEW either and allow him to even come there because they would. Here's what the WWE would think. Cody Rhodes is working without a contract, and we're going to try to steal him away from the AEW. We're going to make him a shock entrant into the Royal Rumble, and then he's not going to play by the rules. They're going to use it for their publicity. He really, his contract maybe hasn't really even expired, and we're going to get used. They're not going to do it. They're just not going to do it. Vince McMahon and company's not taking that chance. So that's not happening. Her fiance just joined AEW, so do I think there's a modicum of a chance that Britt Baker's going to the WWE? No. Of course not. And I mean, what's she supposed to say? Oh, yeah, I'd love to work over there. I'd go over there in a heartbeat when her husband's just arrived in AEW. That's not going to happen. So both of those things are kind of really non-stories that got blown up online. So, Mike, you know, take these things with a grain of salt. I don't think either one of them have a snowball's chance in hell of happening.
No, they don't, and particularly the fact that, he still wrestles, but he's got a lot of irons in the fire, this Cody Rhodes, including They just started the film, that Go Big show, and he's got the whole Roads to the Top thing, reality show that he's doing.
Right.
So even if he's not on AEW TV, he has a lot of other things going on, let alone the fact that he is the boss and he sets the rules, and if he wants to go take a shot at wrestling in Japan, you know, he can do it, you know. So whereas if he goes to the WWE, that ain't gonna happen, you know.
No, and there's no evidence that they would even use him in a way that he'd want to be used. One other piece of news is that Daniel Bryan apparently wanted to work for a promotion, an indie promotion, that has not yet been utilized, an area that's not yet been utilized by AEW, and he was told no. He was told, well, we're going to run that area eventually, and we want you to work for us before you work for anybody else in that area. So here we go, folks, which is exactly what I told you. I remember when all the wrestling fans were doing Kumbaya, saying AEW is going to be so different. Their talent's going to be able to go anywhere they want, anytime they want. They're going to be able to call their own shots. I'll work for you, but I'm also working for – I told you, this is not going to work. And they're not going to do it, because at the end of the day, it's a business. It's not a club. See, this is the thing. A lot of fans think this is a clubhouse. We're all in a big clubhouse together, and we're all friends, and we all pretend to fight, and we're all having a great time, and it's fun, like in the neighbor's backyard. It's not the way it is, folks. This is a business. What do you think Tony Khan is going to let Daniel Bryan go to some indie federation that they haven't even worked the territory and get hurt, possibly, and then not be able to work for him? You're nuts. It's not going to happen. There's got to be something big in it for them to let them, their people do that. There's nothing in it for Tony Khan. They're going to tell Daniel Bryan no, which is exactly what they did. Anyway, let's go into Raw. We started out shaky, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. We started out shaky. We started out with the women's division, and it was, what's the right word for it? Revealing. Raw's women's division is not good. It's just not good. You don't really have anybody rising to the top right now. You have Becky Lynch, and of course she's extremely popular, but who do we have? Bianca Belair? Well, Bianca Belair is fantastic, but she's been used and used and used and used, and people are feeling like, well, we've seen her fight for the title a zillion times, and we've seen her be the champion, and, you know, who else? Who else you got? The answer is Liv Morgan. Well, been there, done that, didn't work. Doudrop, not working at all. I don't care what anybody says, okay? Remember where you heard it, because while everybody's saying she's so good, I don't think she's very good. She's better than Nia Jax in the theory that she don't hurt anybody. But did you watch her get kind of knock herself out of the ring? Liv Morgan's supposed to hold open the ropes, and she goes tumbling out because her momentum, she couldn't stop her momentum. She literally stops and basically climbs out of the ring and then falls down. She can't even do a tumble from the ring. She can't do it. I mean, it really hurt the match. I watched that part of the match and I said, well, that's absolutely ridiculous. And I'm sorry, if I'm Vince McMahon and I have a wrestler who's going to do that spot and that's how bad they do it, I got issues with that. Either A, don't ever do that spot again, because you obviously can't or you're afraid to. Or B, you better start practicing, because you don't go running with a freight train force at somebody, stop dead, and carefully get yourself between the ropes and then fall down. And that's exactly what Doudrop did. I think she's overrated. I really do. Liv Morgan's not ready. We see Liv Morgan is not ready. Bianca Belair is ready, but she's been there, done that. And I think all this really did was show us how weak the actual competition is now. Not because they're not good wrestlers necessarily, but because it's all been done. You've used this all up. And you don't have anybody in reserve waiting, you know, and that's a shame. Obviously, Becky Lynch's tirade led into a tag team match where her and Doudrop took on Liv Morgan and Bianca Belair. It was an okay match. You know, it's an okay match. There was a couple of flubs, but mostly it was okay. Then we had this weird ending where Doudrop, I guess, thought it was a fatal four-way. And she kicked Becky Lynch off. Liv Morgan, for no good reason, tries to pin her herself, realizes I'm not the person who's legal, and then steps back outside the ring and picks up Becky Lynch's hand and tags her, gives her the splash and pins her. I guess this was supposed to lead toward us furthering the Becky Lynch Doudrop feud. Look, we have a problem with this feud, and that is Doudrop's not ready, and she's not going to be the champion. Thankfully, she's not going to be the champion. Now, I don't want to hear anybody say, well, you got to understand she's a big woman and whatever. Well, yeah, well, Vader did moonsaults. So, you know, Brody Lee did all kinds of flips on the outside of the ring. He was a big dude. You don't do what you can't do. And if a spot says you run at the ropes and they hold it open and you fall out, then you have to make it look like you fell out. Not that you stopped dead, took your left foot, got it over the middle rope, and then threw your body to the ground. It was pathetic. It hurt the match for me, and I thought it was a terrible, terrible start to Raw, Mike, because I thought it showed their weakness of their division.
You know, we thought at one point that Nia Jax was the best. Wasn't very good, but at least with her, she might have been a little bit too careful. But when she did that whole spot, when she would go into the post and hit the post and tumble out the ring, at least it looked fluid. At least it looked like something that actually could happen, right? Whereas Doudrop just, you know, there are bigger women. I mean, look, you look at, even though she may or may not be a woman, what's her name? And
Nyla Rose, Queen Kong, there's bigger women, yeah.
Yeah, Nyla Rose I'm thinking about. Even Tamina is better than that, you know?
Yeah, I think she's overrated, Mike. I mean, I'm not saying she's terrible. And certainly if you gave me the choice between somebody who botched a few moves and somebody who hurt people, I'll take the person who botches the few moves. But you can see her weakness. And her weakness is she is very, very timid when it comes to throwing her body around because she's a big girl. And she doesn't have that agility. She doesn't trust in her ability to land correctly, I guess. It's a problem, Todd, and it shows very, very clearly in this women's division when you have all the contenders out at once.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when we watched that opening last night on Monday Night Raw, the tag team women's match, it's like this looks terrible. Like we've been saying for a long time now, the WWE women's division, not just Raw, SmackDown, their women's division has been terrible for a long time.
Yeah, it's starting to look not good because you've got Rhea Ripley out of the title picture. You've got Nikki Ash out of the title picture pretty much. You got Carmella and Queen Zelina doing their own whatever. And it's just down to these three women, really. And one of them's clumsy. One of them's great but has had her shot and had her time in the sun. And the other one is not ready. Anyway. So I'm down on Raw so far. I'm saying, here we go. More accentuating our weaknesses and not our strengths. And then we get to Alpha Academy coming out. And when I saw them backstage with the graduation outfits, I said, dear God, here we go. It's going to be painful. And I was pleasantly surprised. Chad Gable was very, very good on the mic. Otis has that. I'm telling you right now, I don't know how people cannot see it. I don't care whether it's the heel or the face. Otis has something. His body language, his facial expressions, the way he can carry things off, Otis has that intangible charisma. You can really make him something if you try hard enough. I watched this skit and I'm saying to myself, this reminds me of the fun days of WWE when it was actually fun. It's actually fun to watch. And Chad Gable was 100% everything you could ask for. How this guy is not being promoted much more heavily, I don't know. I mean, he's a tag team champion, so I guess they're starting to. But listen, he's been around a long time. And if this guy's this good on the mic and can pull off these things. And Otis was brilliant. Now, out comes, obviously, Riddle. And even Riddle was good. And the back and forth between them, I thought was really good, with Chad Gable saying, I don't even know if you understand what a rematch is. That's how stupid you are. Otis, and then, by the way, a great line where he says, Otis, who has no last name that we know of, was pretty good. Listen, everybody was good. We knew what was coming. We knew Randy was going to be there. But it was great. It was fun. I actually laughed a couple of times. It made me interested in the rematch. It solidified a couple of things. Remember, we always talk about branches on a tree. Well, here's the branches on the tree. The branches on the tree is obviously Riddle and Orton are still on the same page, even having lost, which means that Randy Orton did not blame his loss on Riddle and say, okay, well, we're done as a tag team. They're refocusing themselves. They actually had a plan that worked. It appears as though Chad Gable and Otis are going to be presented as viable threats and people who are not going to be easy to beat. Chad Gable, if he can do that on the mic, needs the mic every week. He needs the mic every single week. Him and Riddle's back and forth was brilliant, by the way. So even though we knew an RKO was coming, I'm telling you, this brought me right back into the show, Mike. I was so down after the women's beginning, and this brought me right back into it. I thought it was harkening back to the heyday of WWE being fun.
Right, and think about this. This is, I think, going back into the past, this is kind of what they had envisioned when they came up with the Dean Douglas thing. What Chad Gable was obviously carrying off, because think about it. The obvious, I don't want to say finish to this whole Alpha Academy thing is what they did, but think about it. It was a journey. It was him teaching Otis how to win and him teaching Otis how to, I don't want to say be a professional wrestler, but again, it's the obvious almost ending to this whole Alpha Academy thing is the graduation from the Alpha Academy.
Right. So now he's arrived, you know. Otis has arrived, supposedly. And this is, listen, this is going to be good news because these guys are fun. What's also good news is I promise you the WWE was looking at Team RK-Bro as a way to get one guy against the other. But they've heard the fans. They understand that the fans are really digging them still, and they're saying, you know what? Not yet. Let's just keep going. Don't fix it if it ain't broke. That's a good sign, because usually the WWE breaks it. So I'm very happy that the WWE is seeing, okay, the fans are still into this. Let's not go there just yet. There's plenty more story to be told. Yes, tell the story slowly, please. These guys have not, just because they lost the belt doesn't mean a thing. Keep them hunting for the belt for a while. There's a lot of great skits you can do. There's a lot of great angles you can have. Take your time. Take your time with this, and it'll really mean something when they do fight each other, which they eventually will. But it will mean something. I thought this was a really good skit, Don.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that was one of the best segments I've seen, too. And one of the announcers says, Riddle is dressed up like the Statue of Liberty or something.
Statue of Liberty.
One of them said, one of the announcers said it was a Corey Graves or Byron
Corey
Saxon.
Graves, yeah.
And he says he was just like the Statue of Liberty or something like that.
Yeah, he was dressed as the Statue of Liberty. And Otis's facial expressions, I'm telling you, he nails it. Every single time. He is just somebody that you, at least for me, he's somebody that you say you have to watch him. He's one of these people that command your attention. And that, you cannot buy that. And you can't teach it either, by the way. You can't teach that. That's something. It's just a natural charisma of watching, wanting to watch someone. Anyway, backstage, Kevin Owens runs into Damian Priest and didn't like this too much, and I'll tell you why I didn't like it. Damian Priest does not know how to play this character. Either he doesn't know how to play this character, or he is purposely being led astray on how to play this character, one of the two. Because if you really honestly do want to do this character, then Damian Priest has to not want to have his dark side come out because he knows it's to his detriment. In other words, he knows that's his weakness. So instead of saying, you better not anger me because if I get angry, you know, you're the Incredible Hulk all of a sudden. If I get angry, you're not going to like me when I'm angry. Well, then why don't you get angry right away and you'll never lose your belt? No, he should be saying, I have to resist that temptation. It's in me and I don't want it to be in me. And it's what caused me trouble my whole life growing up as a kid. I have to fight this. And these guys are purposely trying to pull it out of me. They're purposely trying to do it because they know that is my weakness. They're targeting my weakness. No, he's playing it up like for bravado. You better hope that you don't anger me. That's totally the wrong way. The right way is exactly as I said it. Him realizing this is my weakness. This is what always got me in trouble. And they're now exploiting it. And I have to try the hardest that I possibly can to keep my composure in that ring. And they know it. And that's why they're going to try to push my buttons. That would be interesting. This is not interesting. And he's coming off as a heel. He's coming off as a heel. Now, Kevin Owens goes out for the KO show. Him and Seth Rollins are gold. I'm telling you, I know they got bigger plans for the both of them. They're not going to be a tag team. But they are gold together, absolutely gold. This is the best team they've had going since Jericho and KO were doing their thing. And this could go places, you know, because it's not going to happen. You're not going to see KO versus Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, I promise you. Because I don't think they think Kevin Owens is that big of a draw. But I almost wouldn't mind if they did. Because you're starting to play this pretty well. I just think you're probably going to play it well past WrestleMania. Well past WrestleMania. They were great, Mike. And once again, you know, give these guys the mic every week. They're interesting to listen to, and they're fun to watch.
They are fun to watch, and they're interesting to listen to. And they play off of each other really, really well. And the fact of the matter is it's one of the best things they have going in on Raw right now is that, you know, it's like, okay, these two, they're coming out, he's going to be on the KO show and they're going to be talking and you want to watch that, you know, and it is what it is, you know, I mean, this is another thing that it's not broken. You don't need to fix it.
No, and what's interesting about this is both of these guys are similar heels, meaning they're both really devious. They're both like the Daffy Duck of the WWE in the sense that they, you know, they're conniving, you know, they're backstabbing, you know, they would stab each other in the back in a heartbeat. But they're right all smiles and happy and patting each other on the ass. And it's just funny. It's funny to watch, and it's interesting, and they do it really, really, really well. This is the best thing KO's done in a couple of years. So I really hope that they keep this going. Now, this leads right into Damian Priest coming out and interrupting it. Full of you ain't got a chance to beat Roman Reigns. What do you mean he ain't got a chance to beat Roman Reigns? He's beat Brock Lesnar. The man's beat Brock Lesnar twice. That was a mistake. That was a huge mistake. Again, whoever wrote that for Damian Priest, totally blowing his character. Damian Priest should have come out there and said, KO, here's a bad news for you. You ain't winning the Rumble. And I'm going to make sure you're not winning the Rumble. As far as you, Seth, maybe you will beat Roman Reigns. Maybe you will. You're good enough to do it. I know you're good enough to do it. But guess who's first in line if you do? That would have been better than to say, well, you can't. Nobody in this arena thinks you can win. What are you talking about? He's beating Brock Lesnar. It was dumb. Match was good. And Kevin Owens wins by a devious fake injury. But again, they're playing up. You can beat Damian Priest if you don't let that dark side of him come out. I think it should be the opposite. I think it should be he's too hard to beat when he stays composed. You have to drive him into losing his temper. And then, even though you might take a bad beating, he makes a lot of mistakes and he's sloppy. That would be more interesting. Watching him being forced to try to maintain his composure is a hell of a lot better than trying to do this Incredible Hulk thing that does not work. So it was a good match, though, Mike. I didn't mind it. I just think they're mishandling Priest's character a lot.
Right. I think so, too. And look, if you remember that TV show, what was the big thing? You know, first off, when he would see that reporter, when David Mannion would see that reporter, what he would tell him was this: Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And throughout the show, what would happen? They would throw him around. They would beat on him. And all of a sudden, after a while, he had enough of it, right? And he'd turn into he'd Hulk out, you know?
But you know what they didn't do, Mike? They didn't have Bruce Banner or David Banner, whichever they called him on the show. I think it was David Banner. They didn't have David Banner brag about it. They didn't have him go up to these people and say, go ahead, push my buttons and see what's going to happen to you. He was the opposite. He was apologetic. Please don't. I don't want to go there. I don't want this to happen. That's what made it work, because he was a sympathetic character. And you said, as much as these guys deserve what they're getting, he really doesn't want to do this. Nah, Damian Priest is like, come on, do it. I don't get it. I don't get the character. And I just don't think it's a very good one. And I don't think he's doing it very well. And I'd much rather you just went back to what you were doing. Much, much rather. Now they did a package with Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley, and this was, they should do this more often. WWE is so good at this, I'm telling you. It made it feel like a real match, you know? You're like, wow, this is very interesting. They cut out all the bull crap, and they just said, here's these two guys and their athletic endeavors, their history. I liked it. I liked it a lot, Todd. This is something I think they should explore doing more often.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was one of the – I kind of like that package, too, with the Lesnar and the Lashley package there. They cut out the BS. They showed clips of the history – Not against each other, but their respective other matches or other people. Like you said, this straight up highlights.
It just felt right for these two, and I'm so glad they did it, Mike. I thought, geez, the WWE, who's always good at this type of stuff, by the way, really knocked it out of the park.
It really did, and look, this only makes you want to see that match and possibly another one like it even more. And that's what you want. And look, we one time said that a match between these two guys is a money match. And they're treating it that way.
Absolutely. They took the high road with this. I'm so glad they did. It worked perfectly. We then get to Austin Theory backstage with Vince McMahon, and I got to tell you, I'm so happy about this skit, and I'll tell you why. The last several that Vince McMahon did, I really felt like Vince was losing his touch. Vince used to be so good at this. He used to be so good at being the over-the-top villain that you're just like, he's so exaggerated, he's so over-the-top, that it's actually funny. And he hasn't been. He's been just more creepy and weird. Well, this one returned to it when he literally says to him, you know, you lost to Finn Balor before. Well, yeah, I know I did, but then I beat him up, beat the hell out of him, and that's kind of like almost like a half victory, isn't it? And Vince was like, no, No, it's not. There's no such thing as a half victory. You lost that match. But that's okay because you got a rematch. And if you don't win, I'm going to beat the hell out of you. I'm going to grab an equalizer, and I am literally going to beat you until you're nothing but a bunch of bone and snot and hair, and then I'm going to take a selfie, and I'm going to send it to your mom. And Austin Theory's reaction was great. What they're trying to do now, I see, they're shifting it a little bit. It was getting creepy and weird. Now it's getting better. What I see is like the old movies where a gangster takes a young criminal under his wing, and he tells him, look, this is how bad I am, you know, and you're never gonna top how bad I am, but I'll take you under my wing. And eventually that young criminal turns out to be even worse than him, or that young criminal turns on him, or whatever it happens to be, but there's a story there. Now I see the story. Now, a lot of people were really upset that Finn Balor lost. I don't understand why you're this upset. Number one, Finn Balor won a couple weeks ago, so they're only 50-50. Number two, Finn Balor still has the demon persona to pull out if he wants to have another match with Austin Theory, which is very likely to happen. Number three, please tell me how Finn Balor helped your company. You sent him down to NXT to be the champion. He didn't move the needle at all. He didn't move that needle one iota. So you think he's going to move the needle in the WWE? You think he's going to be a big product seller in the WWE? He's not. He's popular because he seems like a nice guy. He's popular because he says the right things out of the ring. But as far as him being a huge major draw or somebody the fans are going to get behind as a major champion, not going to happen. Now, I think they're going to turn Finn Balor heel. And I think what you're going to see, maybe it's just me, but they keep saying, you don't want that Damian side to come out of me. Well, maybe Finn Balor is going to have the demon side, and we're going to see the dark side versus the demon side. That would be pretty interesting if they could do that with Damian Priest and Finn Balor. Finn Balor as a heel. Might be good. Or maybe flip Damian Priest if that's what you want to do. I think because they keep saying there's that double side of him, eventually they're going to say the same thing about Finn Balor. It seems like they're doing it on purpose. What's the darkest side of Damian Priest, the Damian side? Well, what's the darkest side of Finn Balor? The demon side. Seems logical to me. We'll see. We'll see where that's going. As far as Finn Balor being buried, he's not being buried. It's 50-50. But Austin Theory had to win this match. If you're ever going to create a new star, he's got to beat somebody good eventually, and he's got to beat somebody clean eventually good, and he did it. And I'm glad he did it because it means that the WWE mic is getting serious about him and making him someone who's going to matter in the future.
Right, and if you look at what they did, how he beat him, whose move did he use?
Right.
He used the GTS, which is who?
Yep. No, you're absolutely correct. And I don't think it buries Finn Balor, do you? I mean, I know a lot of people wrote to me and said, well, there goes a great wrestler, another great wrestler, WWE is going to blow. I don't see that, Mike.
I don't see it either. And look, there is still some things you can do with Finn Balor, you know. I mean, I've always made the suggestion, you're really not doing anything with other than what they're doing with Almost and AJ and all that stuff, and they're really not doing anything with Nakamura. I mean, other than trying to promote Rick Boogs. I mean, put those three guys together. That's a branch on a tree there, or at least two of those guys. AJ can be himself by himself, but those other two guys probably need to be in a group.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Finn Balor would do better if he was in a group. Anyway, we have Nikki A.S.H. confronting. We're supposed to have a match but with Rhea Ripley, but it didn't really turn into that thanks to Queen Zelina and Charlotte coming down. I'm not overly interested in this. Once again, the way you're handling the women's division, you should be damn glad you got Becky Lynch, because the rest of the women are not being handled well. and it's just not something that people are paying all that much attention to. So you're going to have a Rhea Ripley feud with Nikki Ash. Okay. Well, I got news. Whoever loses that feud is done. What are you going to do? You're going to have Nikki Ash win and be this super villain who thinks she's a superhero? Well, then Rhea Ripley's done. Rhea Ripley demolishes Nikki Ash. She goes back to Palookaville, and she's nobody. So I'm not liking where that's heading either. The women's division is very – it has problems. And most of the problems is you really haven't promoted any of these people to any level where we take them seriously as potential contenders. That's the problem. Anyway, before we get to Almos and Reggie, we go up to the balcony where Tozawa and Tamina and R-Truth and a referee's eating popcorn. Really, see, that's the little things WWE used to do that was fun. That was a lot of fun. And I have to tell you that when I saw them running down to the ring to chase Dana Brooke, my first thought was, Jesus Christ, they're going to cost almost this match. Reggie's going to pull some shit out and win this match. Now, I said, they can't do this after they've let him be AJ, and they can't do this after they've let a man handle somebody, but that would be just what the WWE might do. And I thought to myself, Jesus, they're going to pull the trigger on this. Now, thankfully, they didn't. Just the opposite. It was a total squash match. Almost as doing, I don't care what anybody says. He does not have to do a bunch of moves. Get that out of your mind that he has to do this and do that. And he doesn't have to do anything. All he has to do is what he's doing. Be this big, dominant, I can take you. I don't care how good you are scientifically. I don't care how many flip-floppy moves you do. I'm a big, strong, monstrous dude, and I'll just squash you like a bug. That's what he has to do. He's doing it really, really, really well. I'll tell you something else the WWE is doing well. They're starting to get some sympathy for Reggie. We're seeing that Dana Brooke obviously cares about him. And look, we'll see what ends up happening here. Dana Brooke's got to lose that belt really soon. That's obvious. But the bottom line of the situation is almost did a fine job. The WWE turned it into a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of fun as well, Todd. I thought it was well done.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with that skit last night with Dana Brooke and Reggie. And you had Tozawa, R-Truth, Tamina, and the referee sitting like in the balcony part, eating popcorn, like watching a play or a movie or something.
That's one
of the funniest things I haven't seen in a while either. And, you know, at least it's not near sort of not near Reggie and Dana Brooke there.
See, that's the thing. WWE used to do fun stuff like that all the time, and then they stopped paying attention to detail and said, oh, we're not going to go through all that trouble. Last night it felt like they went through some trouble, Mike, to make sure things were fun and entertaining.
And look, the thing is you look at the guys that they had, that they did it with. Okay, Tamina in that situation is a straight person, right? Because
right.
You know the other two guys there, not Tozawa and R-Truth, can carry off the comedy. So you know what you were going to get there. You know, when I saw that, I say, okay, I get it. Tamina's a straight person here. She's the one that feeds them the lines, she's the one that feeds them the lines that they obviously take and knock out of the park. You know, that was her job there. That was Tamina's job.
And what makes
job.
Her great in that spot, Mike, is she's so deadpan. She's so emotionless. She doesn't really have a lot of personality. So when she's with those two guys, Tozawa, who has a ton of personality, R-Truth, who has a ton of personality, it's so funny because she's so out of place. She is so completely out of place that she's almost in place, which is ironic, but that's how it feels. It's like the last person you'd think was hanging with them, and there she is hanging with – it's working. That little group is working. Now, if they're only there for the comedy and they're only there for, you know, a couple of skits of entertainment, that's okay. Because it's fun. It added to this match. Because this match was nothing. And if it was taken dead seriously and none of this little comedic stuff had happened, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. You got to the same conclusion, almost killed him and no problem, but you made it more fun than it would have been if you just did that. That's what the WWE used to do. Again, branches on the tree. While we're going to have almost destroy Reggie anyway, we may as well plug in this little team of Tozawa and R-Truth and Tamina and get fans used to them being sort of a comical whatever. Works for me. I was happy with it. We then get the Street Profits back. Well, let me go to the thing with Maurice. There's a little bit of a downer, and I'll tell you why. Maurice is no actress. She's just no actress. This could have been 5-star if you had somebody really, really, really good on that microphone who could have legitimately said, look, I love my husband, and I support everything he does, including this feud with Edge. Because I think my husband's right. Dragging me into it, the mother of his children, was a mistake. And he gets hot-headed, and he says things he doesn't mean, and he says things before I get to even open my mouth. And I never agreed to this. And my days in this ring are done. And I am not taking my chances of getting into this ring again and hurting myself and not being able to take care of my children or whatever. So this match isn't happening. And again, then Beth Phoenix could have said, I have to a certain extent, I have to respect that. As much as I'd like to get my hands on you, I guess I respect it. But I'm coming down there and we're going to have a talk. Because this nonsense of you interfering in matches, you don't get free reign. You say you don't want to be involved, then keep away. Because you don't get to beat on my husband, you don't get to do whatever, and then say, oh no, I don't want to be in the ring. That would have made perfect sense. Instead, she was so bad at it that you just knew, well, the Miz is there and he's going to attack him. It's exactly what happened. And then she hits her with a brick in the, you know, in the back of the neck that was in her purse. Okay, well, they had to do something to further the feud. It's not that this skit was bad. It's that they just didn't have the talent to pull it off, Mike, and that's unfortunate because it could have been really good.
Right, and look, I knew once she hit her and Beth Phoenix, who, both for her strength and power and stuff, went down like a ton, well, for lack of a better term, ton of bricks, you know, I knew that purse had to have something in it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was a brick. It could have been a gold bar. It could have been any type of hard thing. I didn't know it was just going to be a simple brick, you know. But you know that when she hit her the way she hit her and the way she went down, you knew something was in that big purse other than it was something more than a purse, you know.
Right.
So I like that. I agree with you. If it was somebody different, if they decided to do this with the Miz and they kept Morrison and Taya Valkyrie around, or you know, or they did it with Morrison and Edge and they kept Morrison and Taya Valkyrie around, then you would have had two wrestlers, two pretty good actresses in Beth Phoenix and Taya Valkyrie that could have carried this thing off better, you know?
Yep, absolutely. See, Maurice had the out of, I have kids now, my life is different. Beth, you do too. And maybe in, how long did you stay retired? How long did you work behind the desk? Why did you do that, Beth? Did you do that because you were afraid that you might get hurt and not be able to take care of your children? Tell the truth. That way, Beth could have said, you know, watch out, I do not like this. Well, she's saying is right. She's right. So why don't I just go in there and her and I talk this out. You and Edge can have your feud. You and Miz can have your feud. Maybe she's right. And then she gets hit with the brick. And then she says, well, that's it. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. It's on. That would have made more sense. So a little bit of a writing there. We get to the Street Profits backstage with the Mysterios. I keep thinking the Street Profits are going to turn, but then I remember that Otis and Gable are the tag team champions, and like they probably want faces. But, man, they keep teasing it. They keep just pushing that button a little bit that we could at any time. This was a really fun eight-man match. I had a lot of fun watching it. I don't care what anybody says. They're going nowhere. They're doing nothing. But Dolph Ziggler and Rude are a fantastic team. They are every bit the professional and professional wrestlers. These guys always put on a decent match. Always do. Now, I feel sorry for Apollo Crews because he's just done. He is done as done can be. And Aziz is going to go down the tubes with him because the act is over. They gave it a shot. They decided they didn't like it, and now he's just going to be some dude who gets counts the ring lights. They're not pinning Aziz. They're pinning Apollo all the time, but the act is over, believe me. It's a shame. Still a really fun match. Really fun match. I had a good time watching it, Todd. I thought everybody did a great job, and it was fun to watch.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, last night I thought for a second Dominic was going to throw Mr. Ray over the top rope.
It was the opposite, okay. Yeah.
But kind of surprised. I got swerved there, sort of. Ray did it to Dominic.
Yeah, you know, Ray's got a good out on this. I had people write me, say, maybe Ray's turning. No, no, no. Ray's going to say, I want to teach my son a lesson. You're going in that Royal Rumble. It's every man for himself. Trust nobody. I taught him that lesson so that he has a better chance. That's fine. Dominic's not going to take it that way. Dominic's going to throw Ray out of this Royal Rumble. I guarantee you he's going to. But what they're doing here now is they're making little side storylines in the Rumble. We know Dominic's not winning the Royal Rumble. We know Ray's not winning the Rumble. We know the Street Profits are not winning the Rumble. But there's little side stories to, oh, if they get in there with this person, there could be some whatever. That's fine. That's exactly what you need to do. Take the guys we know is not winning and at least give them side stories so we say we're interested when they get in the ring. Otherwise, Dominic gets in the ring, you're like, whatever, he's not winning. But now when Dominic gets in the ring and you say, well, it's Dominic and Ray in there, well, better watch Dominic. He might throw Ray out. Better watch the Street Profits. Maybe they'll do something. They're starting to set up little side plots in the Royal Rumble. Thank you. It's about time, Mike, that they got the message that that's what needs to happen.
Right. And the thing for me is this, with the Street Profits, they're almost overplaying. They're almost overplaying the whole lovable face type thing, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's also...
It's going to be very interesting to see if they – I don't think they're going to turn him heel, though, Mike, because if they did, they're kind of going nowhere because you got a heel tag team right now as the champions. If RK-Bro take it back, yeah, they might. And that's what I thought that was going to happen. I did not think Alpha Academy was going to win the tag team champions. I really thought the Street Profits were turning heel and they were going to go after RK-Bro. I really, really did. They didn't pull that trigger. I'm glad they didn't pull that trigger because Alpha Academy is looking great. But I think the Street Profits eventually will turn heel. We then get Seth Rollins against Bobby Lashley. Fantastic main event. Now, we knew neither one of these guys were going to lose. How could you possibly have them lose? Neither one of these guys were going to lose. So for the people who wrote to me and said, oh, it's a rip-off ending, well, what did you think was going to happen? I didn't think it was a rip-off ending. I thought it was an ending that made pretty damn good sense. Bobby Lashley, last week, beat the hell out of the Hurt Business when they attacked him. The Hurt Business was looking for revenge. They came down to do it again. Still got the hell beat out of him. But while Seth Rollins was kind of busy saying, who cares? Let him beat the hell out of Bobby Lashley. Here come the Usos, who did not get their hands on Seth Rollins on SmackDown. And they gave him the double super kick. I was perfectly okay with this ending. In fact, I thought it was a well-written ending. You're not going to let either one of these guys lose. At the same time, you have set up a very, very interesting situation. See, if you just did this with the Hurt Business, then every fan would have said, oh, I know what's going to happen in the Brock Lesnar match. Just when Bobby Lashley looks like he's going to win, here comes the Hurt Business, and Lashley's going to break the full Nelson and try to go after somebody, and Brock Lesnar's going to F5 him and win. They ruined it. They ruined the ending. By doing it this way, you could say, well, no, maybe it's going to be the Usos who cost Seth Rollins. Or maybe they're both going to cost them. You have now made it less obvious who's going to win in the Royal Rumble. You've now literally set up a scenario where many things could happen. Many different things could happen. So I'm perfectly happy with this ending. And these guys put on it started really slow. They don't have a great chemistry. Seth Rollins and Lashley are two very different workers, and they don't necessarily work super well together, but they certainly got better as the match went on. As the match went on and it got faster paced, it was really good. These guys are, you know, they're great at what they do. It was an entertaining ending. It made me now question what's going to happen at the Royal Rumble a little bit, Mike. So I thought it was a perfectly fine ending. I didn't think it was a rip-off ending at all.
I didn't think it was a rip-off ending. And really, yeah, they don't seem to really work well. But in this particular match, I mean, look, Lashley sold a lot in this match. I mean, he sold the hell out of Seth Rollins. Lashley is supposed to be this unstoppable monster of a man, and Seth Rollins ended up sort of kind of injuring him a little bit, hurting him in terms of, and basically what they said, what the comment, it might have been Corey Graves, it might have been Ryan Saxton. How is this injury to Lashley going to affect the match with
Brock Lesnar?
With
yeah,
Brock.
And you know what else they did, Mike, that I thought was great? They showed very obviously that Seth Rollins can handle a bigger guy, so he certainly can handle Roman Reigns. He can handle a powerhouse. He can take the blows and then start wearing them down and start picking a body part and working on the legs and doing that kind of stuff. It clearly showed he has a game plan for the larger, stronger athletes. At the same time, it showed Bobby Lashley's main weakness is probably the quicker, more agile athletes, but a powerhouses he can handle. He can handle two guys at the same time. He's just going to come in there and try to beat them. Brock Lesnar don't have any of those fancy Seth Rollins moves. So there you go. I think they actually increased both people's stock. Thought it was a really good match, Todd. Not a super match, and I know a lot of people were disappointed with the ending, but at the same time, I think the ending made perfect.
I think you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good match, but a lot of people were disappointed about how the match ended with a no contest. I was happy with the match, how they ended, sort of. I don't know what everybody else's problem is about complaining about how the match ended with Rollins and Lashley there.
I would have complained, Todd, if they didn't set it up. I would have complained if this happened out of nowhere. But you set up the Hurt Business last week when Bobby Lashley beat them up. You set up the Usos on SmackDown when Seth Rollins escaped them. You set this up perfectly. So it's very logical that this would happen. So I don't have a problem with it, Mike. I think it was a very good idea.
I think it's a very good idea as well. And think about it. I mean, look, it doesn't take away from either one of the two guys' big matches. In fact, it adds to those two guys' big matches, if you think about it. I mean, I still think a series of matches between Lashley and Lesnar would be gold. I still think that. And we know with the history between Roman Reigns and and Seth Rollins, that even if Seth Rollins doesn't win the match or does win the match, the next one or two matches between those two guys are going to be gold. I mean,
I'm beginning to see. Remember what we always said, Mike? Remember we always said we want the fans to anticipate. Well, I'm beginning to anticipate. I'm beginning to see a Kevin Owens, Damian Priest feud. Good. I like that. I'm beginning to see maybe Austin Theory moving up and taking on, somebody better. Good. I'm waiting for that. I can't wait to see the Alpha Academy in the rematch and how they move on. I'm starting to see maybe, again, Seth Rollins, Owens. Well, there's so many things going on. Now, they're starting to right the ship a little bit. Now, I did promise I'd talk about one thing briefly, and that is Eric Bischoff's comment on AEW while he said, say what you want about the WWE and AEW, but WWE will make more money going to Saudi Arabia in one show than AEW will make the whole year from Turner Broadcasting. He's absolutely correct. You can be mad at him all you want. He's absolutely correct. Now, I was totally against Saudi Arabia for a while. I've changed my mind, and I'll tell you why I've changed my mind. If you're perfectly okay with the NBA going to China, who probably unleashed a virus that killed I don't know how many people, who are putting Uyghurs in work camps and death camps, basically, and you're saying it's okay for them to go to China and going to the Olympics, that's perfectly okay, well, then you can't be mad at Vince McMahon. Simple as that. Don't play holier than thou when you're perfectly okay with things that are just as bad, if not worse. So if we're going to be okay with that, then you better be okay with the Saudi Arabia thing. That's all I got to say. As far as the Alexa Bliss thing, we know she's coming back with Lily and stuff. The minute I read that Alexa Bliss was the top seller that still is actively wrestling, only below Steve Austin and John Cena, and 90% of those sales were Lily dolls, I said, if you think they're getting rid of that Lily doll, you are insane. They're just going to revamp it and hope to sell another $3 million worth of that merchandise. Anyway, I got news. For the first time in a long time, I was actually entertained. I laughed. I thought some things were exciting. I was like, oh, good, this furthers a feud. I felt like I used to feel when I watched the WWE, and that is a long, long, long time since I felt that way. Long time. It was actually a really entertaining show. So entertaining, I'm giving it an A-. I honestly think this was one of the best shows they put on in a long time, Mike.
I'm going to give it a tentative A-, and say this. Let's see, because it's the same people that put the shows together. Let's see what happens tonight on NXT.
Yes.
If they can kind of write that ship as well.
That's going to be harder, but yeah. I agree with you. They definitely got to write that ship, and that might be a little bit harder to do. Todd, what's your rating?
A-.
Yeah, I really thought this was a good show, guys. I hope they can keep this up. For the first time in a long time, I was actually entertained. It didn't feel like a chore to watch it. It felt like, geez, this is fun. Fun is what professional wrestling is about. That's all it's about. It's not a sport. It's predetermined. It's about fun. It's about having fun watching it. Last night I had fun watching it. I hope you guys did too, and we will see you on Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.